Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you're here. Nicole Galinas is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. She is the Searle Freedom Trust Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor of City Journal, and she's our friend. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. It's always good to be on.
It's good to have you back. Nicole, there are so many issues going on right now with the financial crisis, that the financial sector crisis, I should say, the credit crisis that we're seeing, not just in the United States, but really across the world, and to a large degree. There are a number of issues out there. We had the Bear Stearns meltdown that the Fed bailed out, basically, or prevented from getting any worse. We've had a number of other issues that are going on, but two of the organizations that are becoming very clear now that we've got some serious exposure with them. Still waiting to happen. Another shoe waiting to drop is in the area of the mortgage organizations that are called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, what I'd like for you to do is tell the audience a little bit about the history of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and a little bit about what they do.
Sure, absolutely. You have to go way back to the 1920s and to think about how securities prices, regular old stock market securities, they were increasing stratospherically in value, and you had banks lending against these securities, very similarly to how we lend against home values right now. Mm-hmm. You had all of these commercial banks saying, we'll lend regular people money to go out and buy stocks on the stock market. And what happened was, when the stock values plummeted, these banks lost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's similar to how banks can lose a lot of money when the value of a house that they've loaned money against plummets, and then they did not have any money left to lend.
And the banks failed.
Every dollar that the banks could get, they had to put toward these losses. And so you went through the 1930s. One of the problems of the 1930s was that people could not borrow to buy or refinance a home.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, by 1938, the president, Congress, all of the home builders were tired of this, saying, we have all kinds of people out there with jobs, with good credit who want to buy a home, but there's no banks who will lend them the money. So mm-hmm. they set up Fannie's predecessor company to do that. And this was back then an official government company.
Right.
And then fast forward, I guess, another almost 40 years, and President Johnson said, we're going to privatize this company to get it off the books. But it was well known by the investment community that the government would never let Fannie, or by then it had a competitor, Freddie Mac, to fail, because it was just too important as a national policy goal to have as broad home ownership as possible.
So these organizations went from being publicly owned by the government, or government owned, to privately owned, but with the implied belief that the government would guarantee or would prevent the organizations from going under.
Right, exactly.
Implicit, if not explicit, and so then they became private companies, and these companies were buying mortgages from local banks, right? Local originators, right?
What they do, for the most part, they guarantee private mortgages. So if you go to your local bank, you may never hear the name Fannie or Freddie, but what happens is once your bank lends you the money, Fannie and Freddie puts their stamp of approval on this mortgage saying if anything happens, if you don't repay the mortgage, and if the house sells for less than what is owed, they'll step in and make up the difference. And so
which takes
then,
the local bank off the hook.
Right, exactly. And then the local bank can sell these mortgages to private investors. And then you know, that's most of Fannie and Freddie's obligations. About another quarter of their obligations is they own, they invest in some mortgages themselves on their own.
But these companies became traded on the stock market, didn't they? Their shares,
they're
publicly traded companies, folks. That's something that's important to remember. Tell us the difference between Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
There's really no difference. Freddie was set up because back in the 70s, people were worried that Fannie was getting too big, so they wanted it to have a competitor company. But, of course, if you have two companies with the same incentives in the same implied government guarantee and private sector risk-taking incentives, they're not really competing with each other. They were really just sort of a duopoly.
Right. So now we fast forward 70 years from their origins, and what we have now are companies that have had a lot of controversy around them in the last, especially in the last 10 years, with the accounting irregularities, some leadership challenges, in my opinion, inappropriate lobbying on Capitol Hill. What do you think? Where are we right now in all this?
Sure. Well, these companies show what happens when the nation policy-wise is uncertain whether something is a private goal or a public goal. If it's a completely private thing to go out, buy a house, invest in it as a personal homeowner, take the risk. Certain people won't be able to afford a home. They won't be able to afford a home at one point in their lives. That's one thing. These would have been private companies,
right,
with the private sector risk and reward framework. But what happened was the government said this is not a private goal. This is really a public sector policy that we want as many people to be homeowners as possible. So these companies, they had shareholders who wanted to get the most bang for their buck, meaning the companies had tremendous leverage, far more leverage than the investment banks have. But yet these shareholders also knew that they didn't have to worry too much about the risk because the government was there.
They believed the government. Well, guess what, folks?
Right.
Guess what, folks? That day has kind of come, and the ticket, the total exposure that these two companies have, we kind of now know what they are. It's pretty much common knowledge. We get back, when we come back after these messages, Nicola's going to help us understand where the exposure is, what is the government going to do about it, how much is it going to cost you and me. Welcome back. A little bit from the Who there, little pinball wizard. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out. Use them to your advantage. We got lots of good stuff there that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful in your small business. smallbusinessadvocate.com. And don't forget our knowledge base, askjim.biz.biz. Well, you get small business answers now. Nicole Galinas is with us. She's with the Manhattan Institute. And, Nicole, give us that website, please.
It's, one website is manhattan-institute.org, and the other one is city-journal.org.
All right, so check both of those out. And we're talking about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And by the way, Nicole is the Soil Freedom Trust Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and we know a bunch of her colleagues there at the Manhattan Institute. They do a great job of keeping us posted on various public policy issues, like the one we're talking about right now, the what are we going to do about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, these two siblings, basically? That's one way to think about them, isn't it? They kind of are siblings. They do basically the same thing. They basically have the same charter. They basically have the same connection to the government, but they're sick right now, aren't they, because of some of the other things that have been going on. Nicole, tell the audience, if everything went to you-know-where in a handbasket, what would the government potentially be on the ticket for, on the hook for? Tell the audience the magnitude of the exposure that these two organizations have put together.
Well, the total nominal exposure is about $5.4 trillion.
Now, hold on a second. Hold on. Folks, the entire U.S. economy, that's about 40%. About 40% or so of the annual GDP of the United States. That's a big number.
That's right, and it would increase the national debt by about half as well.
Yeah.
And I think what people,
the national debt's only about $5 trillion, isn't it?
Right, exactly. It's $9 trillion, actually.
It's $9 trillion, okay.
People don't understand, how are Fannie and Freddie connected to other parts of the credit crisis that we're hearing about, especially when they didn't invest largely in these subprime loans and these other exotic mortgages. But the problem is that these types of private mortgages that Fannie and Freddie did not insure helped to push up housing prices to unsustainable levels, and you had tremendous
You're talking about the subprime mortgages.
Yes, exactly. You had tremendous speculation at the margins, which helped more than double housing prices in just
upon which Fannie Mae, the whirlwind, I should say, upon which Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac got onto as well, right? I mean, they were part of this whole acceleration and an increase in the value of homes, and that increased their exposure. Now, here's my question, though, Nicole. Where are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac right now? Where's the government in all this? What is the government now doing to prevent Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from failing?
Well, what's happening is that investors see a couple of years down the line or a year down the line the real risk that we're talking about here, which very few people get into, but the problem is not so much subprime or exotic mortgages.
Right.
The problem is that as Fannie and Freddie, the bulk of their obligations are your normal, traditional 30-year fixed-rate mortgages. They're not subprime, they're not exotic, they do not go into these mortgages as the private investments and commercial banks did, but as you see housing prices continue to fall, more and more people who got 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, they'll also be unable and or unwilling to repay the obligations that they took out, and you'll see more people walk away from traditional prime 30-year mortgages. Now, you don't need tens of millions of people to do this to get Fannie and Freddie in trouble because they have very little room for error.
They're undercapitalized, aren't they, basically now?
Right, exactly. They've only got about $80 billion in actual capital. So when you see that against $5.4 trillion in obligations, it takes very, very few people percentage-wise to do this.
Is it an overstatement, based on what you just said, to say that currently Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are bankrupt?
They're not bankrupt. Mr. Poole from the Federal Reserve helped to set off this firestorm by saying that they're technically insolvent. A company will never be bankrupt as long as privates or any investors are willing to lend to it, and you see that Fannie and Freddie's creditors from around the world, the government stepping in a couple of weeks ago and saying if enough people with 30-year fixed-rate mortgages walk away from their homes, go into foreclosure, and Fannie and Freddie suffer huge losses, then we will step in as taxpayers.
But that puts the exposure back on the taxpayer, folks. And so here's my question to you, Nicole. We only got about 30 seconds. Should Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac be privatized? And disconnected completely from the government.
I think there's no way to do that as long as we have a public policy goal of universal home ownership.
Yeah.
If you don't
yeah.
do that, it's very easy to do.
Yeah, yeah. Nicole, thank you for being here. Good job today. Appreciate you helping us to sort some of this out. It's still pretty complicated, but folks, we've got to get our hands around this. This is a shoe waiting to drop. Nicole Galinas is our guest. She's with the Manhattan Institute, and I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.